having here a whole series of verses, namely text 2:7. I think we'll just chant one. Brahma vartasakamastu. Yajita Brahmana Patim. Indram Indriya Kamastu. Raja Kama Prajapatim. Brahma vartasakamastu. Yajita Brahmana Patim. Indram Indriya Kamastu. Rajakama Prajapatin. Then I'll read all these other verses really quick. Devi Maya Duchikamas, Tejas Kamo Vibhavasun, Vasu Kamavasun, Rudun Virya Kamo Taviryavan, Anadaya Kamasta Taditin, Swarga Kamo Dite Sutan, Visvan Devan Raja Kama Sajan Sansadako Visvan. Ayus Kama Svino Devo Pusti Kama Inam Jayet, Pratista Kama Puruso Ruda Sido Kama Taro, Rupa Bikama Gandharvan, Stri Kama Upsara Urvasim, Adipatya Kama Sarvesam Jajeta Paramistinam, Yajyam Jajetya Isas Kama, Kusa Kama Prachetasam, Vichakamas to Girisam, Dampadyata Umam Satin. And I'll skip the word by word. Translation. One who desires to be absorbed in the impersonal Brahmajyoti effulgence should worship the master of the Vedas, Lord Brahma, or Brihaspati, the learned priest. One who desires powerful sex should worship the heavenly king Indra, and one who desires good progeny should worship the great progenitors called the Prajapatis. One who desires good fortune should worship Durgadevi, the superintendent of the material world. One desiring to be very powerful should worship fire, and one who aspires only after money should worship the Vasus. One should worship the Rudra, incarnations of Lord Shiva, if he wants to be a great hero. One of one's large stock of grain should worship Aditi. One who desires to attain the heavenly planet should worship the sons of Aditi. One who desires a worldly kingdom should worship Vishvadev. And one who wants to be popular with the general mass of population should worship the Sadhya demigod. One who desires a long span of life should worship the demigods known as the Aswini Kumaras. And a person desiring a strongly built body should worship the earth. One who desires stability in his post should worship the horizon and the earth combined. One who desires to be beautiful should worship the beautiful residents of the Gandharva planet. And one who desires a good wife should worship the Apsaras and the Urvasi society girls of the heavenly kingdom. One who desires domination over others should worship Lord Brahma, the head of the universe. One who desires tangible fame should worship the personality of Godhead, and one who desires a good bank balance should worship the demigod Varuna. If one desires to be a greatly learned man, he should worship Lord Shiva, and if one desires a good marital relation, he should worship the chaste goddess Uma, the wife of Lord Shiva. There are different modes of worship for different persons desiring success in a particular subject. The conditioned soul living within the purview of the material world cannot be an expert in every type of materially enjoyable asset, but one can have considerable influence over a particular matter by worshipping a particular demigod. As mentioned above, Ravana was made a very powerful man by worshipping Lord Shiva, and he used to offer severed heads to please Lord Shiva. He became so powerful by the grace of Lord Shiva that all the demigods were afraid of him. until he had lost chance the personality of Godhead Sri Ramachandra and thus ruined himself. In other words, all such persons who aspire after gaining some or all the material objects of enjoyment
or the growth
materialistic persons are on the whole less intelligent, as confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita 7.20. It is said that those who are bereft of all good sense, or those who are bewildered, or those whose intelligence is withdrawn by the deluding energy of Maya, aspire to achieve all sorts of material enjoyment in life by pleasing various demigods, or by advancing a material civilization under the heading of scientific process. The real problem of life in the material world is to solve the question of birth, death, old age, and disease. No one wants to change his birthright. No one wants to meet death. No one wants to be old or invalid. And no one wants diseases. But these problems are solved neither by the grace of any demigod, nor by the so-called advancement of material science. In the Bhagavad Gita, as well in the Srimad Bhagavatam, such less intelligent persons have been described as devoid of all good sense. Sukadeva Goswami said that out of the 8,400,000 species of living entities, the human form of life is rare and valuable, and out of those rare human beings, those who are conscious of the material problems are rather still, and the still more rare persons are those who are conscious of the value of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which contains the messages of the Lord and his pure devotees. Death is inevitable for everyone, intelligent or foolish. But Pariksit Maharaj has been addressed by the Goswami as the Manasi, or the man of highly developed mind, because at the time of death he left all material enjoyment and completely surrendered into the lotus feet of the Lord by hearing his message from the right person, Sukadeva Goswami. But aspirations for material enjoyment by endeavoring persons are condemned. Such aspirations are sometimes like the intoxication of the degraded human society. Intelligent persons should try to avoid these aspirations and seek instead the permanent life
by returning home back to Godhead.
So in this series of verses, we see all kinds of material benefits that can be attained. For example, one can obtain powerful sex life, and of course, many will be interested. One can get good children, many may desire so, or good fortune. One may, just to be a lucky person, yeah, or one may look for money, worship the Vasus. So all the goals that are described here are goals that one can have for a while, and then it's gone anyway. No matter how much you worship Indra for powerful sex life, at one point it's over. It's just over. Yeah. At one point, at all, one is too old. Yeah. Time, mrityu sarva harasyatsaham. Death, by death, I take everyone, everything away. Loka kalaksay krit. I am the destroyer of everything in the form of time. So, that's the point. Whatever we get from the demigods, it will not stand the test of time. So, what is the point of it? Rather, for the short time that we have it, say, no, but at least that short time I can enjoy. But that short time, we will get even more attached to the material energy and more entangled. And then it will be taken away anyway. And then we'll be worse off. Like if you have been extremely rich, how can one be just ordinary after that? How many people are sort of satisfied? But if one has been very rich, how can one ever be satisfied to be ordinary? If one has been very famous, how can one just be a common person? Like that. We can understand that whatever fruits one obtains from the demigods are not at all beneficial. Not at all. Sometimes they say that that when we are suffering, we're better off than when we're enjoying in the material world. Because when we're suffering, then we develop a stronger and stronger determination to get out of the material world. And when we're enjoying, we become more and more attached to the material world. So this is all less intelligent. Basically, that's what we're looking at here in these verses. Not to kind of awaken in us a desire, oh, maybe I should worship such and such demigod, because I always wanted that. Varuna, and you'll have wealth. Indra, you'll have powerful sex life. Not bad. Uma, beautiful wife, stability in marriage, like that. Attractive. These things we want. But that is bewilderment. It is bewilderment. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, he says, Yanti Deva Deva Vrata Deva, that if we worship the devas, then Yanti Deva. If it's Deva Vrata, then Yanti Deva, then we will go to the devatas, and we will go to the demigods. Is it if we worship the Pitris, Pitri Vrata, yes, then we will go there. Pitriyanti, we will attain the Pitris. Or when we worship ghost and spirit, then we will attain such ghost and spirit. But if we worship Krishna, then we will attain Krishna. Yanti mat yajinopimam. If you worship me, then you will attain me. So this is an important principle of worship, that whomever we worship, that personality we will attain. We will attain that. That is the result of the worship. So that's an important point. One is not just worshipping the demigods for some material benefits, but one will also attain the demigods. One will also attain that spirit of the demigods. One is basically developing the desire of becoming a demigod. Say, well, that's not bad. I wouldn't mind that. Yes, but you will not overcome death. Sometimes to illustrate that, I invite people to a party. I said, we'll have a wonderful party. Wonderful. In this party, we will have everything you desire. Whatever it is, whatever you want, it will be there in this party. So, will you come? Will you come to this party? Anything you want, you can have it in this party. Will you come? You must come. Anything you desire. You must have. The only thing is, at the end of the party, we shoot you in the head. Will you come? Basically, this is what's going on. This is it. This is it. We are getting all this material enjoyment, even possibly become a demigod, but at the end, it's finished. Still, death will still strike. So what is the point? At the end of the party, we'll get shot in the head. Done. I don't think many will come to the party if we don't get the conditions. But we might say, no, but it's very short. It's very quickly done. And the enjoyment goes the whole evening. And only for one moment at the end, boom, finished. See. But still, we say, no, thank you so much. Very kind of you to offer. I think I will. Unfortunately, I have another engagement. And that is intelligent, if we have another engagement, an engagement in devotional service. If we don't waste our time with these temporary benefits. So that is basically what Bhagavatam is highlighting here, by describing the worship of these demigods, highlighting that all the goals are temporary and and meaningless. And we can see that Srila Prabhupada has just treated all these verses together, from verse 2 to 7, he's just put them all together, one purport. He merged the translation. Okay, get it over and done with. Right? We're not going to draw this out. Say, no, this is just an illustration of the less intelligent people, unlike Maharaj Pariksit, who are bewildered by temporary goals. I saw a video clip of a certain Baba with fuzzy hair, and it was summer in India, it was hot. So he was seated in the program, and he's just like everyone, perspiring. And then someone brought a towel. And then, the towel in his face, and he started to make like movements like this. And he held the towel down, and then a golden lingam, a golden egg, came out of his mouth. Ah, come on, you know. Anybody could have done that, right? If you have the money to buy a golden egg in the beginning, yeah? Then I can do it for you also. It's pretty easy. You know what I'm saying? First you bring me a towel with a big golden egg inside. It was and then as soon as he spit out this egg, there was a whole group of people around and they went like, oh my God. So enamored by a little bit of gold. So enamored by a little bit of gold. Gold. Yeah. Excited. So this is the illusory energy. Yes, with gold, all that sense gratification seems to be at our fingertips. But again, no guarantee. Because you can't buy youth. You can't buy health. You can't buy beauty. You can try with a facelift and some plastic surgery. But, you know, it's difficult. Even then, it shows. So the point is that all material enjoyment is just fading. And one can try desperately to hold on to it, but how much can we be successful? There was a movie, and these people were coming home from a party, and they looked like beautiful Hollywood types, you know. The man was broad-shouldered, athletic, gorgeous hair. The lady, she had was a big blonde, and all the right measurements in the right places, and everything was there. Then they came home and in the evening, and of course they kicked their shoes off. It turned out he had false plateaus in his shoes, which made him taller. So as soon as he took them off, he was actually a lot shorter. Then they took off their wigs. She had miserable hair, and he was bald. As he took off his jacket with the shoulder fillings, underneath there was the belly strap, and he let the belly strap go while she let the air out of the balloons. And it just went on like that. And in the end, there's these two old people sitting in bed, and their teeth are smiling at you from a glass of water. And it's like Hollywood, no, this like show. This is holding on to an illusion and trying to create an illusion, and is holding on to an illusion. Somehow or other, trying to hold on to the material enjoyment. No. We still look young. We can still enjoy it. No problem. So, in this way, with time, the opportunities go less. I once was in Germany on a Sunday feast, and there was a Russian clown. A real Russian clown from the stage circus. And what he was doing, he was spinning balls around. two on his fingers, two on his toes, and one with a little stick on top of his nose.
Ah, he was good.
What it had to do with Krishna consciousness, I don't know. But he was there on the Sunday feast, and after I gave the lecture, so I tried to sort of make something out of it. So then I got some inspiration from Krishna, and I spoke about the stream of opportunities. And the stream of opportunities is flowing. And when you're young, you take a few and you bounce them around and spin them around and like that. Really cool. Then with time, as time moves on, you're not so playful anymore. You become more purposeful. This is a good opportunity. Bang. Got it. Next. Rubbish, rubbish, rubbish. Good one coming. Okay. Bang. Got it. But then time moves along. And the opportunities keep on coming, and there's another one, and here's a good one, and anyway, it's tough to keep up with it, let it go. It's not that good anyway. And in the end, two old people were sitting on a bench looking at the stream of opportunity, and one says to the other, "That was a good one." So, with time, the capacity to enjoy diminishes. What can we do? So why so desperately holding on? Why so desperately trying to increase our material enjoyment? Why make it so important? Oh no, I mean, not this, no, not that. I have very important decisions to make in my life. Oh, what should I do? Shall I live here? Shall I live there? How about living somewhere? No, but what if I live in this place? There are these and these problems. But if I go to that place, then there are those problems. Now, what should I do? Do something. Should I get married? Yes. Or should I not get married? Yes. But you're saying yes to everything. Yes. Because these things don't matter so much. You want to be married? All right, be married. You don't want to be married? All right, don't be married. Big deal.
I'm not married. Wow.
You know?
Flash, flash. Saffron everywhere.
Wow. Amazing. You're not married. But will that happen? Will that help? It is through celibacy. Will we actually get love of God? You can be celibate for 100 lifetimes, and do you think that that will give you love of God? Do you think that that will give you love of God?
No.
It is devotional service that will give us love of God. I am married to a devotee. You think that will give you love of God? No, you have to be yourself a devotee as well. You have to do devotional service. It is not just automatically. Even a lion has to go out and chase for breakfast. It's not that the deers are running into the mouth of the lion. Dire lion is lying. And the deers are just walking in. No. So we have to do something. In devotional service. And that is what counts. Ashram issues. Not so important. All the external, where you live, whether you live on this part of town or on the other part of town. Anyway, you know, if you live on this part of town, you have to pay more, but drive less. If you live on another part of town, you pay less and drive more. You can decide what you want. It's in one way or another, you're going to have to take some tapasya. Tapo divyam putraka yena sattvam sutyet yasmat pranasukyam tanastam. That is life in the material world. No matter what you do, there's tapasya. And well, you decide which tapasya you like the best. That's what it's all about. The tapasya of being married or the tapasya of being alone. You decide. Both are tapasya. There's no doubt about it. Material life has that element of tapasya, of some austerity. Inevitably so. No one can avoid it. is the design. It's basically the design of the material world. Therefore, Lord Rishabhdev pointed this out to his 100 sons. Nayam deho bhajam yaloke kastam kamam arate vibhujam ye tapodigam putrakiye sutram sujayatyasma pramat sukhyam tanat. This human form of life is not meant for sense gratification. It's not going to work. It's not possible. Because the design is like bringing us suffering. Therefore, we shouldn't be too particular about how we live. Yes, something has to be a little bit suitable. Like I travel, and sometimes it's a little bit inconvenient because in one place the blanket is too thick, you know, and you're just like in the sauna all night. And the next place you come, the blanket is too thin, you know. In the third place, the blanket is too short, and it's a fight between your feet and your neck all night, you know. So what can I say, you know? That's travel, right? That things are just not adjusted to your needs, right? It's not meant for you, you know. It's not your size blanket or whatever. That's just travel. So when you live in a place, then after a while you got it figured out, you know, my blanket, how I love you, how I love you, my favorite pillow and everything, you know, comfy, exactly the way you like it. Fine, that's alright, that's not so too bad. You know, Krishna consciousness, bhakti, is not denying us these basic comforts. That is for the impersonalists. Because the impersonalists, for them, anything in this material world is Maya. There's only Maya in all directions, an ocean of Maya. Therefore, whatever they use, they have to minimize it. But we just use it for sustaining our Krishna consciousness. Sustaining our Krishna consciousness. So that's fine. Sleep well, nice and warm and cozy, so that you are fit and can do devotional service. Nothing wrong with that. Therefore, we don't have to sleep on the hardest bed that we can find, right? And use only a bed sheet in the winter, not too thick, not flannel. Only no blanket, only bed sheet. Or I knew a devotee, he never wore a kurta in the winter, and just in India, in Vrindavan, it's very cold. I was only wearing a lungi. And you know, it lasted for 15 years, and then he got sick. What is the benefit of these things? Great austerities, fasting. I fast every Ekadasi and Dwadasi as well. I was for the last 24 years. Fine. You know, you can do it for 24 lifetimes more. And do you think you will make any progress towards going back to the spiritual world with all your fasting? Not really. The Chaitanya Bhagavat is giving the example of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu having the kirtans in the house of Srivas Thakur, and the doors were closed. Only devotees allowed inside. And then one day, Lord Chaitanya couldn't get into the mood, and he felt that there was some intruder in the house. And it turned out that Srivas had let in this Brahmana. And this Brahmana had been living on only milk for 1 year. And Lord Chaitanya had him thrown out. So it's like, do you think that just by drinking milk for a year you can attain me? No. No question. But later that Brahmana was so excited that he had seen Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and he was just praying to get that chance again. Then Lord Chaitanya let him back in. Okay, now you can come back. So it's not by austerity. It is not by austerity that we will attain Krishna.
It is stated in the next, although austerity is highlighted by Lord Risadev in the fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam,
austerity in itself is not one of the limbs of bhakti. It is renunciation and austerity are not limbs of bhakti. They don't give you devotional service. They are preliminary activities. But at the same time, austerity is inevitable. It is there. But we are not looking for special austerities.
Oh yes, yes. Oh, so austere. Oh, yes.
Eat one potato a month. Very fantastic. And we're all going to go your potato dust. And spurry. Yeah, the spurt. That's what you're going to be. And in your next life, if you're not careful, you become a potato. Yeah? That's how it is. So what can be said, you know? The thing is really, serve Krishna. And nothing else is important. Whether it is pleasure or whether it is austerity. So some sense, some austerity will come and then we have to tolerate. That is what we do. Whatever comes on its own accord, alright, we make some adjustments, but we're not going to spend all our time trying to fix the problem. Because this is the nature of material life. It's not only about sense gratification. I want to enjoy so many things. Oh yes, I want to enjoy. That's only one part. The other part is, I want to avoid trouble. I want to avoid lots of trouble. And we do lots of worship, etc., to avoid trouble. But neither are we going to work so hard to get enjoyment, nor are we going to work so hard to avoid trouble. So some trouble, we just take it. That spirit we have to develop. That's where austerity kicks in our life. We can't waste our time to just take away all the problems of life. Problems are built in. And it's like, you know, I'm going to tell you a fairy tale. Just listen carefully. Once upon a time, a long, long time ago, my dear children, believe it or not, there was a time when suitcases had no wheels. Yeah, really? Yeah. You know, in those days, believe it or not, you know, people would carry it by the handle, in their hands, and they'd hold the suitcase in one hand until their fingers were bent and they couldn't get it straight no more. And then they tried the other hand for a while. Sometimes they would put a suitcase on the shoulder. Some carried them on their back. Some on their head, even, you know. I mean, in so many ways, they were carrying suitcases. Yeah, those were the days, you know. A long, long time ago. And, well, austerity or suffering in this material world is like that. I had some realizations. Once I was in the city of Amsterdam, which is like, you know, I would say it rains a little more than Melbourne. There is a bit more wind than Melbourne, and the winter is a bit colder than Melbourne. Otherwise, it's kind of similar to Melbourne, if you know what I mean, in terms of the weather. So I was walking there on the street with a red nose and the eternal drop on the nose, which is, you know, which is that kind of weather. It goes nose and drop together. So I was walking on the street and I walked past this shopping window and suddenly there was a poster, blue sky, blue ocean and beach. And somehow or other, before I knew it, I had bought the ticket to Kenya. You know. So, hey, Kenya, here I come. And I went to La Playa, to the beach. And I was there on the beach. And, you know, everywhere coconuts, coconuts, oh yes, coconut. And I was drinking coconut and it was very nice. And then, you know, I was enjoying. And everywhere they were selling cashews, you know, no peanuts, cashews, very cheap and best. So munching cashews. But anyway, I came on the beach, it was hot, you know, hot, hot at last, but a bit too hot maybe. So I decided to go sit under the palm tree from the poster, it was there. Oh yes, it was under the palm tree. And then as I was sitting under the palm tree, suddenly, plop.
Plop?
What's that? Scorpion. Wow, you know, yeah, wait until I come back home and I tell them the whole story, how I single-handedly fought off this dangerous scorpion. Hey, this holiday is a big success. And then, plop, another scorpion. Gosh, you know, it's like, geez, no problem, I'll just go for a swim. And then someone said, swim, you can't swim now. I said, why not? Since it's high tide, you can't swim. I said, I'm from Holland, I can swim, no problem. He said, no, you can't, because the sharks are coming over the reef. Sharks. So I couldn't swim, I couldn't sit under the palm trees. So finally, I was sitting on the beach with a towel over my head and realizing that the suitcase of karma had just gone from one hand to the other hand. First I was freezing and wet in the rain, and now I was roasting on the hot beach. But my karma was simply still following me around. That's the nature of the material energy. You try to fix a problem and it comes back in another way, because karma is like that. You don't fix the karma. So what to do? So it will come out. Anyway, therefore, it's an illusion when we think that we're going to fix the material world. We're not. A little bit here, a little bit there, make the best of it, and for the rest, tolerate. Can you again fix this? Okay, that's the job. Must be okay. So, anyway, it must be my karma. It's my karma. It follows me around wherever I go in the world. Every temple has the same microphone stand. It's like, I always go down, and it's just, what to do? To do with this karma. So, without criticism, really, it's just the material energy. I know, it's the austerities one has to accept. So that principle is there. Therefore, we're not looking for austerity, but we can also not spend a whole day trying to avoid austerity. We must take some austerity. That is bhakti yoga. And then we just spend our time as much as possible in devotional service. And therefore, the chapter continues quickly. We do all these verses today in one shot, and then tomorrow we can go to the next verse, which is about devotional service. Because that is the topic of the chapter, pure devotional service. That is what we want to talk about, not about demigod worship. It's a waste of time. And we get so many questions, but my great-grandfather was worshipping such and such deity, and in our family it's been a tradition, and what is the problem if we do a little puja on the side? So the point is that we divide our faith. You divide your faith. That is the issue. Wherever you worship, you begin to put some faith, invest faith there. And we should reserve our faith only for Krishna. Therefore, we are only worshipping Krishna and not the demigods. Like I said yesterday, we sometimes think, oh, I'll worship some devata because we don't want to bother Krishna for these things. Only Krishna, we only for big things. But for some small thing, we worship.
Little puja.
Small puja. Small deity, small puja, little. Just to get solved the small problems, we don't want to bother Krishna with these things. No. The truth is, we put our faith partially in Krishna and partially in the devatas. And that's how it happens. That's how it happened in the past. Many Vishnu temples in South India have turned into demigod temples over time. That in the past the presiding deity was Krishna, later the presiding deity became Durga. That's not uncommon. How did it happen? It happened, there was a main altar with Lord Vishnu on it, and a side altar with the devata, also some puja, but then, you know, gradually the devata was worshipped more and more by more people than Vishnu actually, and then Vishnu went on the side altar and the devata on the main altar, and then eventually Vishnu was put in another place, actually, other temple, a small temple nearby, where no one goes, and suddenly it's become completely demigod worship. So it's not wise. Why would we divide our faith? Why would we? It's difficult enough for us. We are weak. We are by nature already weak in this age, so it's not wise to divide our faith. Therefore we humbly request, no, now we are no longer worshiping. But how can I give this up? Is this not an offense? No, because Srimad Bhagavatam says, Devarsi Uttakta Ninam Pitrinam Akinkaro Nayamni Sarajam Kato Mukundam Saritya Patam. It is saying that all duties to the devas, to the rishis, to the parents, to the forefathers, all duties one is relieved from all duties if one takes up the service of Mukunda. All these other duties are automatically fulfilled. By serving Krishna, the demigods are more satisfied than by any other offering. It is the most satisfying offering to them because they are devotees of Krishna. So they cannot be more satisfied than when one worships Krishna. So this idea that but we are afraid. If we don't worship the demigods, then, don't know what will happen. They will get angry. No, they get angry, and who knows? Then so many bad things will happen to our family. So we just put them on the side of the altar. And Krishna, of course, and not Krishna. We want Krishna. Oh, Krishna. Krishna, my dear. Krishna is our deity. Oh, Krishna, Krishna.
Little demigod.
Little. No. It is. Yeah, but if, what if they get angry? No. Then we are in ignorance. We do not understand. Bhagavatam has first of all stated to us that it is already fulfilled. And it is, we can understand. The demigods are devotees. They'll be most pleased. Most pleased. It's like, you know, what if someone is, give a crude example, that someone was serving me, right? By bringing breakfast every day, and then they stop that, and instead start to go out every day to distribute books, which is what Srila Prabhupada wanted. He wanted everyone to distribute books. You think I'll be upset? Oh God! No, they're not bringing me my breakfast. And what's going on? They're just distributing books. What's going on, you know? I mean, I'm sitting here, they're not bringing my breakfast. And they're going out all day and just distributing books. No. But I will say, go all and distribute books. I'll get my own breakfast. It's more pleasing if we serve Prabhupada than if you serve me. It's more pleasing. It's a crude example, but that's the mood of the demigods. They are more pleased when Krishna is served than when they serve themselves, you see. Therefore, serving Krishna is the greatest task, the greatest way to please the devatas.
Automatically all the blessings come. Automatically all the blessings come.
Lakshmi, Lakshmi, Lakshmi. Lakshmi is with Narayan. You want Lakshmi?
I came into his shop early in the morning. Indian shopkeeper. He's very happy. Oh, my first customer is a sadhu. Oh, very good. Yes. I take his money and then I offer it to Lakshmi. Very nice. I take him up. That will give great blessings for the shop. So his mind has some funny idea. He should have given me a donation instead. What can be said? So he wants Lakshmi so bad. But Lakshmi, and he may get it for a while. But Lakshmi will only stay with Narayan. Everyone knows. So in this way, by serving Krishna, everything will be settled. In Cape Town, we were recently discussing the story of Bali Maharaj, and then Bali Maharaj had all the wealth of the universe, and then he lost it. It was taken away from him. But then in that chapter, it is also stated that if one gets wealth from Krishna as a reward for his devotional service, but then that wealth is never taken away. He said that all other wealth that is attained to another means is always under threat. Always under threat. So, somehow or other, you know, we made some money here, made some money there, made some money this way, that way, and we got it all safe, and good deposits, and blue chip, and investment, and everything quite kind of secure and safe. But it's constantly under threat. Constantly under that, because the karma that gave us that is running out. It's running out. The demigods, they live in so much opulence, but it's under threat because the karma is running out and they're gonna fall down from that heavenly position again. It is like that. They will again come down to this particular realm. So, like this. We have to be thoroughly convinced, you know, like I'm going over this exercise to sort of show some thoroughness, you know, of like cut here, cut there, and we have to do this ourselves, the cutting. I can't do the cutting here, maybe little, but we have to take the idea. To finish the job ourselves, we have to go home now after this lecture and start cutting our old habits of putting faith in material enjoyment and putting faith in making arrangements for material things. We all have. We have to just cut it until we gradually come to the point. Nothing for me, everything for Krishna. Vasudev Sarvam Iti. Krishna is everything. Bhavana Jamanam Te Jnana Vamam Dvaradite. Vasudev Sarvam Iti Samasadurva. After many, many births, one comes to this point where one accepts that Vasudev is everything. Does that mean that it's saying after many, many births we finally become a devotee? I mean, even devotees are not accepting Vasudev Sarvam Iti. A little bit for Krishna, a little bit for me. Take a little back from Krishna because we need a little more. What to do? These little things are just going on also in the life of devotees. So what to do? Together we have to be brave, isn't it? It's not going to happen automatically. The lions are not going to run into our mouth while we are sleeping. Oops! A deer just walked straight into our mouth. I said, lions walk into our mouth, deers walk into our mouth while we are sleeping. No. The rascals are not going to fly into your mouth. You've got to go and score them.
You got to go out hunting if you want some Mahaprasad. It's like that. You have to score. That's how it is. So yes, like that. We have to be brave, together, courageous, and do something extraordinary and make an endeavor. So that's good. That's why there are nice things. Sometimes we have like a japa retreat all together. Now we're going to chant lots of rounds, or we have a book distribution marathon and we're all going to do that, or something like that. That's good. Or a picnic in the park, and we turn it into a Maha Kirtan event. This is fun. That's pretty good. I think that park is good. The botanical gardens. That was super good. Lots of people were very attracted, and they came, and they were relaxed. They were not afraid. They were tasting some fruits and other things. That was good. Prabhupada started in parks like that. We can do good things in parks. So together we can make a difference. Together. Together we must take on some challenges. Because together we will stimulate each other. Alone, weak. We are weak. Constitutionally weak. No one is strong. We're all weak because we are from the age of Kali. And in the age of Kali, no one is strong. Everyone is weak. Everyone depends on that support of the community of devotees. Okay. Yeah, questions, comments?
The children are not devotees.
The children are not devotees.
So we should teach them to offer pindas and say things like.
No.
No.
First of all, we should never think that anybody is not a devotee. We should think everybody is a devotee. The Uttama Adhikari sees everyone as a devotee. We should find the devotee in other people. It's there. The devotee is there. We should just find that devotee. If we treat someone as not a devotee, then they may also say, yes, I'm not a devotee. That's right. But if we just find the devotee in everyone, we'll wake up the devotee. There is a devotee in every child. There's no doubt about it. Of course, you know, King Vena as a child would kill his playmates, kill his friends. So wasn't he a constitutional demon? But even demons can become devotees. So I think we should be positive. I think in bringing up children, my advice is be positive. It's like you have someone who's coming out of prison, and he's coming out on parole and this and that, and you're just going to say he's a criminal, and you tell everyone watch out, he's a criminal, he's been in jail, you know, he's been in a heavy sentence, he did heavy things, he's a criminal, watch out, be careful, he's a criminal. Then the criminal will always be a criminal, and for the rest of the day he'll be a criminal forever. But if one person puts his faith in that criminal, and they know, no, he's not a criminal. He made a mistake, but actually he's a good person. And then for that one person, because of the faith of that one person, that criminal will be a good person. So even if all your children are criminals, if they have faith in them, they'll become good. Other questions?
My question is, what is the difference between fanaticism and faith?
What is the difference between fanaticism and faith? Fanaticism means we have a conviction without, which is not based on knowledge and realization. It's a conviction which is born out of other motives. We want to be advanced, recognized as advanced because of ulterior motives. In fanaticism, the motive is not Krishna's pleasure. In fanaticism, the motive is our pleasure. Name, fame, glory, recognition, all these kind of things are at the root of fanaticism. So, Krishna consciousness is meant to be natural, right? But purified naturalness. So we must learn. We need knowledge. And we need to adjust our life according to knowledge. And the first point is, it says, Adho Guru Padasraya. First accept the Guru principle. Not first accept a spiritual master, but accept the Guru principle that you are dependent on the directions of teachers. Do not doctor yourself. You know, I was living in Vrindavan, and we had Vrindavan in those days, the doctors were more dangerous than the disease. So we had a book from America, and really America, a good book, which was called Where There Is No Doctor. So you could, like, you know, doctor yourself with that book. You just read the book and you're reading, like, typhoid. It's like, you know, shivers and fever and you have bloodshot eyes. Yes, I have all these symptoms. Oh my God, I have typhoid. Then you read the next page and it says smallpox and says, like, yeah, I have something. Some itch since 3 weeks. Oh my God, I have smallpox as well. And like by the time you read like 10 pages, you had 10 diseases, you know. It was a very popular book. You could see that the devotees had really read it a lot because all the corners were turned in the pages, you know, like that. So it was a very popular book. What to say? But this is the problem when you doctor yourself, you know what I mean? You cannot really figure it out just with a book. So we need a teacher, and a teacher will hold us back from fanaticism. Because the teacher will say, now it's over endeavor. Now it's over endeavor. Now you're pushing more than is required. This is not beneficial. There is no need for this austerity now. Now you're trying to take on so much service that it affects the quality of all your other service. That's no benefit. So we need another person to balance us out, to save us from fanaticism. Because it's not that a few people are fanatics, everybody is a fanatic in the beginning. We all start out as fanatics. Actually, some stay fanatics all the time. So it is by being balanced by mature Vaishnavas that we are that we can become properly situated. So faith, fanaticism means blind faith, and faith cannot be blind, must be based on knowledge, on guidance, like that.
As you mentioned, austerity cannot give love and devotion to Krishna. The devotional service, without love and devotion, becomes austere as well. My question is, how to bring love and devotion? It looks like, you know, it's not in my hand.
Yeah, but you know, I'm like, I think sometimes we're climbing the mountain and thinking about when I get to the top, then, you know, I've climbed the mountain. And we just think only of the top, and we are forgetting to see that even the mountain is very nice on the slope as we're going up. So, in other words, there are many wonderful benefits from devotional service now, not only when we come to full Krishna prema. You know, it is said that Ishwarata dinesu bali sesu dvisatsu cha prema maiti kripopekshe yakaruti samajama, the intermediate devotee. For Ishvara, he has prema for the Supreme. It says prema, he has prema for Ishvara, but not the same prema as the Uttama Adhikari. But it is of the same nature. He has some love. I mean, I was happy to see the deities here after a long time. So nice. I mean, I've been here in the past, and, you know, so it was very nice. Oh, this amazing Gorni Thai, unique in the world, nothing like that. Radha Baba with their conch shell eyes, there's a story to that. And, yes, I remembered it. Jagannath, I'm thinking about Kurma when he was a brahmachari carrying Jagannath up the stairs. So many nice festivals. This kind of previous attachment is there. So many nice things. So we naturally, it brings out nice feelings. So it's not only that the reward comes at the end. There is a reward now, but we are not tasting it now because we are not attentive. So therefore everything is austere. Oh, it's so austere because I have no love. Why do you have no love? You don't love the way the temple looks. You don't love the smell of Mahaprasada. You don't love kirtan. You don't love devotees, how they are trying to be, you know, perfect people. They're really trying to be good people. Nothing there. Nothing. No feeling at all. Nothing. I think it's because we're absent-minded. I give the example of a feast, Indian style, where we sit in rows. It's served out with buckets. Big feast. But you have the bent row. All the other rows, they already have the cheese sabji and the puri, and you sit only with the rice. So you go like, hey, cheese sabji, you have this row, no cheese sabji. Meanwhile, you know, you're munching on the rice. Finally you get the cheese sabji, but no puri. Okay, rice with cheese sabji. Puri. And it goes all the preparations, you know. And at the end, you know, as you're calling out, gulabs, right? And you've eaten the whole feast and you didn't taste a bite. You were just munching on it, you didn't taste it, because all the time you were looking at the other preparations that you didn't have. Look at what you have on your plate, taste it. Govinda Adi Purusham. What will be for breakfast today? Are we really there? Are we there? Are we paying attention? You think that it's only about inattentive rounds? No, it's about inattentive everything in devotional service. And not only attentive chanting, just become attentive. Attentive. And then there is a lot to relish, a lot. So one who only sees spiritual life as austerity is just like absent-minded. It's not there. Cook, are you home? Finished.
Maharaj, you mentioned that whatever, like, wealth given by God for the demon in devotion, like in exchange of devotion, then it stays forever. So
it's not a rule carved in stone, because he can take it away.
Yes.
But it does mention like that.
Because
that the Lord says, when he gives, it's like stable. Therefore, Indra's wealth was stable, and Bali Maharaj's wealth, which was not stable, because Indra's wealth was attained by a reward of the Lord for his pious behavior. Bali Maharaj's wealth was conquered on the strength of some austerity, so he lost it again. The Lord rewards piety. He does.
In case of Arjuna, when Krishna left,
In case of Sudama, you come with Arjuna, I slap you back with Arjuna. You're going to play table tennis.
Arjuna,
I mean. Maybe I don't mean what I do mean. Let's play table tennis. You put Arjuna, I put Sudama. What's the name? What you put names?
Because
Sudama. Read the story of Sudama.